The Economic Development Budget Division for Wednesday, February 13th, will come to order. We have a couple of new people that I want to introduce themselves so that everybody knows who they are. We didn't do it the last time, but go ahead and tell everybody who you are.
Okay. Hello, my name is Carlin Doyle, and I am Senate Counsel. I come to this position having worked for St. Paul Travelers for a while, United Healthcare, working mostly in government relations and regulatory and compliance areas. So I decided to make a change to something more interesting, actually.
Thank you, and welcome aboard.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Kia Steele. I'm the committee page, and I'm glad to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you. Billy?
I'm Billy Deuce. I'm the legislative intern for Senator Tomasoni, and I'm currently a student at the U of M.
And where are you from?
Eau Claire, Wisconsin.
Okay. And he's a Viking, but he's a Viking fan. Okay, I think everybody else we know around here. So we're going to get started. The first four things on the agenda are amendments from previous meeting, and we will act on those once we get a quorum here. But I think we'll take my bill first with Mayor Hess from Aurora. And so, Mayor Hess, if you'll just come up to the table and give us a quick description of the bill and where the treatment has gone, where it needs to go, and what's prompting everything, and where we need to get the money from. So welcome to the committee. And how do you like your new job?
I love it. It's very exciting. Well, good afternoon, Chairperson, Senator Tomasoni, and members of the committee. By way of introduction, my name is Mary Hess, and I am the mayor of the city of Aurora. On behalf of the citizens of Aurora, I want to thank you for this opportunity to speak directly to you about the wastewater regulatory challenges that our little town is facing right now. The city of Aurora is located on the eastern end of the Iron Range, about 60 miles north of Duluth, and has endured many challenges since the closure of LTV steel mining and the loss of 1,400 jobs. Some of you may be familiar with the area as you perhaps toured the area some time ago or within the last year, and probably familiar with our project as well. But either way, we are staring at 2010 Minnesota Pollution Control Permit deadline to eliminate plant bypass events and meet more stringent standards related to the Great Lakes Initiative. In our case, that's Lake Superior. While our residents recognize the responsibility for eliminating bypass and further protecting the beautiful waters in northeastern Minnesota, the 65% or greater low to moderate income people that we have in our city are simply not able, nor do they believe they should have to bear the $4.2 million burden that these regulations bring to bear in Aurora. Our plant operates in full compliance most of the year, but during the snow, melt, and heavy rainfalls, we have problems. Please know that we have already spent considerable time and money having our citizens install sump pumps. We've replaced sewer pipes. We've replaced manholes. This has helped, but it has not eliminated the bypass events, nor does it help address the future Great Lakes Initiative standards. With that in mind, that we have RMA Consulting, the city's engineering firm, and they have drawn up a plan, designed a facility plan and solution, and both of which have already been approved by the Minnesota Pollution Control. We've been working closely with the Public Facilities Authority staff on both PFA and WIF-related financing, and our project has a very high project priority ranking. We've already tapped into the Corps of Engineers, Community Block Development Grants, and IRRRB funds while dramatically raising rates on our low-income citizens. Our current household wastewater rate at this time is $35.51 per month and is the highest on the Iron Range and compares equally or greater to Minnesota cities, cities such as ours, and that is Winsted, which pays $35.35, Crookston at $13, Moore at $37.10, and Crosby at $28.14. In the last year and a half, we have raised the rates for our citizens three different times at $5 a crack. So they've encountered a $15 raise in the last year and a half on their utility rates, and we're looking at another $5 rate again. Hopefully you know now better understand our situation, and hopefully you can better understand why I'm working so closely with Senator Tomasoni and Representative Tom Rukavina in the House to obtain $800,000 in this year's State of Minnesota bonding bill. It is our hope to put this issue behind us and start construction this summer. In closing, and before I answer any questions or concerns that you might have, let me say that the good people of Aurora are tough and are only asked for a hand, not a handout. I've always said our people in Aurora, when the going gets tough, the tough gets going, and that's sure true with our people. Our town was devastated by the LTV job loss. However, it is our hope that brighter days are ahead as we look towards Polymet, the non-ferrous mining company poised to create 400 jobs, and our Mesaba Nugget, which we hope will be employing 50 to 100 very soon. Recently, area residents in Aurora took a risk and took an extra tax burden where we passed a referendum for a school addition, sending a signal that we do believe in our future. Like each one of you, we too desire a cleaner St. Louis River, and we do desire a pristine Lake Superior. However, our future growth prospects should not be stunted by, nor should they, this burden fully exclusively lie on the 1,800 good people in Aurora. These are state of Minnesota waters we're talking about. Please be assured we have and will continue to do our part. We just need you to thoughtfully consider our situation and partner with us in any way you have previously with cities like Duluth and Two Harbors in the form of an $800,000 bonding bill. And thank you very much for letting me talk to you today.
Thank sure. you, Mayor. Senator Metzen.
Mayor Hess, can't think of his title, but former State Representative Steve Wenzel has been involved in getting some help for a lot of rural communities, for example, Aiken, McGregor, McGrath. I think they put in a water tower in McGregor, and I think he was appointed by President Bush, and he has helped a lot of communities. Now, I don't know if you've mentioned that you've tried that route. I can't think, anybody know the title?
Is it the U.S. Agriculture?
Yeah, it's USDA, yes.
Yeah, yeah, and they do things of this nature, I believe. Have you tried that route? I mean, we're going to try to help you here if we can.
Yes, but, yes, I understand.
But that's another avenue, and I'm wondering if you've explored that, Mr. Chair.
I'd have to check. I know they've explored a lot
I'm
of
sure
possibilities, and I've only been in office a month, but I'm pretty familiar with this whole project since the explosion took place on it in 2004. And I'm wondering if they didn't get money then when on the first phase. But I will check it out, and I'll bring that back to our people.
It might be another source of funds also.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. Yes, and that's thank you.
Senator, is that kind of what they do?
Ms. Chair and Senator Metzen, I know that they've helped a number of communities in my district with both separation of wastewater and stormwater and also with the wastewater treatment facilities. So I think it is a viable option.
Yeah, I think you ought to, Mr. Chairman, take a good look at that.
Thank you.
Your staff.
As far as phase two is concerned, you're pretty well set to go on that, it looks to me. And,
yes.
And this is the gap financing that needs to be done. The PFA, I think, has rated, about a 56-point score? It's a pretty good score.
Yes. Our score is, I don't know. Let's see now. I know what it is, too.
58.
Yeah, that's what it is. Thank you.
58. So it's pretty highly rated. It's pretty badly needed. And then there's two more phases to go after this also, right? So
yes. What we're doing is we are bidding the whole project as soon as the paperwork is done with the Army Corps of Engineers, just to see where we stand. We want to get the bids out early. Mm-hmm. We may not be able to do it, but we need to do the second phase.
Okay. All right. Are there any further questions or comments? I just want to tell you, you're doing a really good job. It was a very good presentation. I don't really have to add anything because you covered everything, but we're going to do our best to get this done. And just the fact that you got a very high score at the PFA is a pretty good indication that it'll get funded. So thanks a lot for coming down, and thank you for making
thank
the
you,
committee
Mr. Chairman.
Aware of it.
Thank you, committee members.
Drive carefully on the way home.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Good seeing you. Quorum is present. We have some amendments to act on from the last committee hearing on Monday, which we weren't able to pass because we weren't in session yet, but Senator Metzen will move the A1 amendment on Senate File 2331 for Senator Kretner Solon. Essentially, what it does is cuts the appropriation in half for the Lake Superior Zoo. And so this is just putting the bill into the form. All of these are putting the bills into the form that the author would request. So all those in favor of the Metzen motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed motion is adopted. On Senate File 2332, there's another Kretner Solon bill. Senator Metzen moves that the A1 amendment be adopted. Once again, this is basically cutting the appropriation in half. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed motion is adopted. The Higgins bill, Mr. Jensen, you want to explain a little bit on the Higgins bill and the target center?
Mr. Chairman, members, the request was for $71 million to pay off bonds in the city of Minneapolis. Senator Higgins brought in a new number of $62 million. I have a fiscal note here which we can distribute, which would show the cost in this biennium from the general fund. The $62 million would be the principal remaining amount of the bonds on the Target Center, and those monies would count against the 3% capacity that new authorization. This would be general fund payment from the general fund to retire those bonds.
Okay, and this is once again putting the bill in the form that the author has requested. What's the...
Okay.
Senator Sparks moves 993 as amended. Then we're gonna insert $62 million.
I have the amendment.
Hang on.
Expender. You go from $7 million to $62 million.
No, $71 million to $62 million.
Okay. That's
right. So it's the A1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed motion is adopted. And then Senator Lynch had an amendment, the A1 amendment to Senate File 467 for the Mayo Civic Center complex. And Senator Sparks will move the A1 amendment, once again putting the bill in the form that the author has requested. So all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye. Opposed motion is adopted. Okay, thank you very much.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Are those bills, now that we've as amended, are they just being held over for possible inclusion?
They're being held over for possible inclusion. What we'll be doing after we get done hearing the bulk of the bonding proposals that are the jurisdiction of this committee is we'll give some kind of recommendation in probably a letter form to the chair of the bonding committee, and he'll take a look at them, and we'll try and figure out how to get them into the bill. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Let's see. Senator Olson, this kind of looks like Olson Day, so I'm going to let you go now. You got about four bills to do here, and I know you got lots of people from far away, so we'll see what we can do here. I think we're expecting a snowstorm up north, and some of these people have to drive home tonight. So. Hinkley's pretty close, though. Senator Olson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Which bill would you like to take?
First up, we have Bemidji Event Center. I guess we're out of order on the list, but that was my understanding.
Okay. Whichever one you want is fine.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm delighted to be here today on behalf of the Bemidji Event Center project, which has been a project that's been in the works by the a community project for probably about the last 10 years. This project is unique, I believe, because it's not only a key economic driver for our community, which is in the heart of north central Minnesota. So geographically, we're located, for those of you who aren't familiar with Bemidji, right in the center of the state. But it's also a combination or a partnership with Bemidji State University, which is why this makes this really a unique proposal. Bemidji State University has a Division I hockey program, and in order to move forward with and actually to maintain its Division I hockey program, it needs to become a part of the WCHA and has been negotiating to make that happen over the last couple of years. One of the requirements in order to make that happen is that the facility at the college has to be replaced. It's outdated, and it certainly doesn't serve the needs of Division I hockey. At the same time, Bemidji, which has been historically a logging and tourism community, has had a need for an event center that would serve to promote tourism and would be a place for many different events to be held for this entire region of the state. Putting those two needs together and working together on one joint project was the reason that the Senate, the legislature, a couple of years ago supported $3 million to move forward with this project, because it was recognized at that time to be a very valuable project to serve both of those needs. Since that time, the locations, once the $3 million was given, and the plans began to move forward with that site, I think something that has made this an even stronger project is the fact that there was property available on the south shore of Lake Bemidji. And this is the only undeveloped property on the lake, which was formerly used as a logging. It was an industrial site. There was a logging facility here years ago, but this was commercial development. And it's an opportunity for the city to take and make this a part of the project and really control what happens on the site. There's going to be a partnership with the DNR, a trail connection through here, and an opportunity to really make this a gem of the north, something similar to what the Duluth has been able to accomplish that will stimulate economic growth, which is badly needed in this area. So at this point, I'd like to turn over the presentation to talk about what this means to the Bemidji community, to our mayor of Bemidji, Mayor Lehman.
Thank you.
Welcome, Mayor. Please state your name for the record.
Richard Lehman, mayor of the city of Bemidji. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much for this opportunity to address you. As Senator Olson stated, the city of Bemidji has been the past recipient of $3 million in monies from the legislature for the investigation of the event center for the city of Bemidji. As she further pointed out, that this has been a considerable community effort, and right now this is one of the most important economic development projects that I will probably see in my lifetime in the city of Bemidji. I've been involved in local politics for 14 years, and this is by far the largest undertaking we've had. This has the possibility of spurring perhaps up to $200 million worth of development in our community, because this will be the anchor of an area that is poised for redevelopment, and it will further help to establish the redevelopment of our downtown business district. As Senator Olson pointed out, there's been considerable amount of local input on this project from the business community, who is represented today by John Carlson, local businessman, the city of Bemidji, the state of Minnesota, of course, with the state support from the legislature and the DNR, and also partnering with Bemidji State University, and President John Quiskard from BSU is with us this afternoon. This construction project has the potential of, well, it will generate 200 jobs during the construction period, and it will generate up to 200 jobs or more upon completion of construction, and the businesses and stuff that will establish themselves as a result of this economic tool. Again, this was a partnership that from the state, City of Bemidji, and Bemidji State University to ensure that the Bemidji State University's Division I hockey team has a home for the future. It is very important to them to establish this for the purpose of being entertained to join the WCHA. This also will help attract future businesses. As you know, anytime economic development occurs in a community, future businesses that are looking at locating in those communities are going to look for the amenities. Bemidji, Minnesota is a regional hub. The addition of an event center will make us a full-service regional hub for our area. We're asking for a hand up, not a handout in this case. Bemidji is poised to... you have $66 million invested in this project. That would be 72% of the total, with the $25 million, the $3 million we've already received, and the $22 million we're asking for now in bonding. As a partnership, that would be 28% of the overall project. And with that, I will ask President Quisgard to make some comments as it relates to Bemidji State.
Thank you, Mayor. Dr. Quisgard, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Tomasoni and Senators. It's my pleasure to be with you today. Bemidji State University is extremely excited about this opportunity. It's the right type of opportunity to have in a community where the community partnerships with the university and the university partners with the community. Probably many of you in this room know that we've been struggling for some time to come up with a facility that it can be a facility that would be at the quality of what's expected in Division I. We've also struggled from the standpoint that to make it economically viable, we need to have a different type of facility than we have at this particular point in time. And so this project becomes particularly important. And you can imagine that I probably have received a fair amount of input about having a project that involves a university activity not be on the university campus. But this is right for the community of Bemidji. This partnership is right for the community of Bemidji. The mayor talks about being in politics for a long period of time at the local level. Well, I've lived over 50 years in Bemidji, and I can tell you I've never seen a project of this type with the potential that this project has for the community of Bemidji. But without this facility, we can't continue to go forward with our Division I hockey program, a program that we've been playing for 51 years. We've achieved 13 national championships, and we're very, very competitive at the Division I level. So we really need the support of the state of Minnesota to help partner with the community of Bemidji, and in partnering with the community of Bemidji, you're also partnering with Bemidji State University. Thank you very much.
And Dr. Quisgard, didn't you just come up with some kind of an agreement with the WCHA that if the building's in place, we got a schedule or something like that?
Chair Tomasoni, you're correct. We've been in negotiations with the WCHA and created something called a scheduling alliance, which is the next step in our progress in moving towards achieving membership in the WCHA. Our women's program is there, but this new program will enable us to play more WCHA teams, which, by the way, we're extremely competitive against, and play more WCHA teams in Bemidji. And so we're really encouraged about, one, the direction of our program, but also what this new scheduling alliance means. And I should also inform you that the City of Bemidji and Bemidji State University have reached agreement on a lease arrangement if we're able to move forward with this facility for 20 years.
And incidentally, this isn't unique because UMD doesn't have its rink on campus either, so it's actually okay that you're doing this. So.
And I'm sure that Chancellor went through the same pressure with the alumni saying, wait a minute, we're not playing this on our campus.
Exactly. Senator Saxhawk.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Dr. Quisgard, I was going to say it isn't on campus, but you can see it.
That's
in fact, it'll be a beautiful sight across the lake, I think so.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions of Dr. Quisgard or the mayor? John?
Okay.
As long as you're here, you might as well say something.
I'm John Carlson. Thank you. Thank you, Chair Tomasoni and Senators. Thanks for having us here. The business community is so solidly behind this project. As Senator Olson said, for the last over 10 years, we have worked as a business community to have this type of facility, and it wasn't until a combination of the university, the City of Bemidji, and the business community all got together and said, we need to be interdependent. We don't act in a vacuum, any one of us. We act together, and we act together for the benefit not only of our community, but for our entire region. And so we really would appreciate any help, and we do appreciate the help that you gave us in the past with the $3 million planning money to get to this point. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Olson.
And so, Mr. Chair, just in summary, for 100 miles in any direction, there isn't a facility to accommodate events like this in our part of the state. And so that's a key component of this, is that it has a regional impact and serves a regional need. The second component, and it can't be emphasized more strongly, is that we really have one sport in the area of Division I significance that actually attracts people to the area and is a draw not just for the college, but an economic benefit to the whole area, and that's Division I hockey in Bemidji. And Dr. Quisgard has made it clear that without this facility now, not 2 years from now, but now, the opportunity to take part in the WCHA will be lost, and we will lose our hockey program at Bemidji State. And so, and the third point I'd like to make is that the city has done everything it can to minimize the request to the state. This started out as a project where we were requesting 40% of the funding from the state. Now that we have the real dollars and what it's cost, there was a lot of pressure to come to the state and ask for $35 or even $40 million. And that would have been more in line with 40% of the cost of the project. But knowing the realities the state faces and the tight bonding bill budget this was going to be, we've really tried to keep our request at $22 million, not with the expectation that we'd inflate the number and then hope for something less, but really trying to be as realistic as possible. And we've looked every other direction we can for additional funding, and we really need that $22 million to make this happen. Thank you.
Thank you. Mayor, did you have one final comment?
I would like to thank the committee for the opportunity to present our case and for the consideration you will be giving our project. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. You have a 2-1 match, actually. It's about a 2-1 match. So, I mean, this is pretty significant effort by the city of Bemidji and the college and whoever else is participating in this. Is there private donations coming in also? Is that what you're here? Okay, good job. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Talk about our hockey careers?
Well, we could start, but I don't know if anybody's interested anymore. Yeah, the older we get, the better we were, Matt. So, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm next going to talk about a project that is equally vital to a community south of Bemidji, the Walker community, which sits on the shores of the Great Leech Lake. Perhaps many of you have been through there vacationing. This is a community that was devastated a number of years ago when the decision was made to close the state facility at Agua Ching. In a town of about 1,000, 300 jobs were lost through that decision. And actually, the state has been slowly closing down the facility and will finally closure will be occurring now this coming March. But most of those jobs are gone. However, in the process of the community looking and trying to determine what they could do with this facility to try to retain those jobs and to benefit the community, an agreement was reached with the state that I think can really turn this into a win-win situation for everyone, and that's to locate a new hospital at the Agua Ching site, as well as some complementary structures and potentially even some government buildings going there longer term. But the hospital is really key to replacing those jobs and to meeting the medical needs of the community. There were some barriers that stood in the way initially. There are some rules about how close one hospital can be to another, and the way those rules were interpreted initially, there was going to have to be special legislation passed at the federal level. While that was underway, the federal government in its wisdom somehow reinterpreted the rules, and now just suddenly within the last few weeks, the green light has been given for the go-ahead to this project. There is a hospital that is going to be coming in and developing the site, and all that remains now is to finalize the agreement between the county and the state and in order to move forward with this really beneficial and wonderful project for the community of Walker. There are a few relatively, in considering the overall value and cost of the project, there are a couple of minor things, but we're still talking minor to the tune of $1.8 million. And the reason we're here before this committee asking for funding for a water line from the community of Walker out to this site is because most of the time when these types of facilities are abandoned by the state, in other cases, they've been able to hook up to city water and sewer, and the state has assisted with the cost of accomplishing that task. the water and sewer at this site are not adequate to be able to do that. And I'll turn this over to Mr. What? You're the one who's going to talk. I'll turn this over to our county commissioner to give you a better idea of what the problem is. But the county really needs to have this issue addressed so that it can go forward and sign a purchase agreement in April and move forward with this project. And so I'd like to now turn it over to Mr. Demjian, our county commissioner in Cass County.
Commissioner, welcome to the committee, and please say your name for the record.
Jim Demjian. Yes. And Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you for listening to us today. This is a very viable thing for the area of Walker, Minnesota, and Leech Lake is getting some of these jobs back. Excuse me. When you lose 300 jobs in a community of 1,000 people over a period of years, it's very detrimental. And, you know, it's a low-income area as we speak. It's a tourist area. The resorts are disappearing because of people buying more lakeshore. It's not viable to make a living in resorts. We've got a lot of retired people moving in that need medical care. And, you know, Cass is one of three counties in the state that does not have a hospital. So, basically, everybody has to go 60 to 40 miles to a hospital for any care. So it's very, very important that this gets done. The state facility had a water system that was not basically viable to use, so it just makes sense to run the water from the city to Aqua Ching. And I cannot express any further, any stronger, how important this is to Cass County, or low-income county, how important this is.
Thank you. Commissioner?
I'd be glad to answer questions.
Okay.
Also available is the county administrator if there are any questions.
Any questions or comments? Do you know if there's a PFA scoring on this yet? No.
I can. Mr. Chairman, Bob Yoakum, Cass County Administrator. Mr. Chairman, we do not have a PFA rating at this point. As the senator indicated, this property is subject to a purchase agreement which was negotiated about a year ago, and we learned just last Friday that the Department of Human Service program exit would occur in mid-March. The Department of Administration, Human Services, DNR is also involved, as well as Department of Health, are all in support of a real estate closing scheduled for April. This avoids carrying costs by the Department of Human Services or other state costs, but because we did not know the program exit schedule from the Department of Human Services, that has brought forward the immediacy here. We're very willing and cooperative to submit to a rating, and I would point out that in our opinion the work would not occur any earlier than the summer of 2009. So this may be a subject for the committee to look at in terms of timing. Our dilemma, however, is that the state is asking the Cass County Board of Commissioners to close on a significant real estate transaction with the state with this utility issue not funded. So we're hoping that through action of the legislature or the various departments involved that we can have a grant agreement by April that provides for a commitment, a future commitment, on the utilities and also the demolition and abatement that we had testified to in Senator Berglund's committee this morning.
Senator Kubley.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I guess, well, Senator Olson or one of your witnesses, I guess I have a couple of small population counties that are struggling to keep their hospital open. I guess I'm looking for information that tells the committee that there's an adequate population base that would patronize this health care facility that would keep it operating at a level that would allow it to remain open as a standalone without significant subsidy from the county.
Mr. Chair,
Senator.
I can let Mr. Yoakum address that, but there is the Benedictine Hospital has done significant studies of the financial viability of this, and maybe you can address that in more detail.
Mr. Yoakum.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the Benedictine Health System, recently reorganized as Essentia Health, based in Duluth, has made a proposal with contingencies to the community to invest approximately 17.5 in Benedictine private capital into this project. The project also has approximately an equal amount in construction commitments for this particular project. The Minnesota Department of Health, when we attempted to obtain exemptions from the 2006 legislature, required Cass County to go through the Department of Health public interest review process, and Mr. Schoenbaum is here from the Department of Health in that regard. Through that process, we have documented to the legislature's satisfaction to date that a hospital of approximately 12 to 13 beds and an accompanying medical clinic is indeed viable. And therefore, the 06 legislature granted our county exemptions from both the long-term care bed moratorium and the hospital bed moratorium. So we believe that through the Department of Health, a real live proposal, we also had to withstand, and I choose that word carefully, at least a preliminary examination by the federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid out of the Chicago office to obtain a federal waiver to locate a hospital more than 29 miles from Park Rapids. So we have had considerable local involvement, private sector commitments, and state review.
Any further questions of the committee? Okay, thank you then very much, and we'll see what we can do.
Mr. Chair and committee members, we'd like to thank you on behalf of the City of Walker, too, for the event center money that was given a year ago.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, Senator Olson, you got one more.
Yes, I have the mayor with me to present information on behalf of a request for $700,000 for a Deer River wastewater treatment facility. And Mayor O'Brien is here with me from Deer River to talk about the community's need. This is one of the lowest income areas in the state, and the lack of capacity for any future growth in the community is holding down the opportunity for economic development to try to address some of those low-income needs. And I'm going to tell you right up front, Mr. Chair, since you asked that question before, the priority list number for this project is 28, which is why we're here presenting it as a separate project.
At the PFA, you mean?
Yes.
Okay, I'm John O'Brien, the mayor of Deer River.
Welcome, Mayor.
Pardon?
Welcome.
Thank you. 20 years ago, two cities that aren't technically touching each other, Zemple and Deer River, joined together and obtained funding to build a sanitary wastewater treatment operation. Both cities are low income. As Senator Olson said, Deer River's median household income is about $23,000. We have many people living on fixed income in single-person households. Deer River has continued to grow. Zemple's actually added population, too. I think their population was 69 back then, and they're in the mid-70s now. But along with adding population, Deer River's got a $10 million expansion going on our local hospital. We've added federally subsidized low-income housing. We built a 50-unit motel that we're very proud of. This council inherited a real decayed infrastructure system because previous councils had gone for years without improving anything. We've been struggling to just to try to catch up. We redid a lot of our water mains. 9 years ago, we added a new water tower. We've solved the water problem on the north end of town. The people on the south end are calling their congressman and Senator Olson on a regular basis. And we're still focusing our funds and energy toward trying to solve that problem. We don't have a backup well. That would be a real issue if we ever did lose our main well. So we've been focusing everything toward the immediate problem of water. While we've known for the previous 10 years that the sanitary pond kit is going to be reaching maximum capacity, and that's going to come up to be a problem for us, too. I guess I don't have anything else to add offhand. I don't know if anybody has any questions.
Mayor, is this a situation where you're being required to upgrade, or is it just the needs of the area are kind of requiring you to upgrade?
We're right on the edge of being required to upgrade. I mean, we're almost at the tipping point where we are beyond acceptable. There's been one or two close calls where we weren't sure if we would meet the PCA requirements.
Okay. And in order to expand, you need to expand physically in Deer River. You need a bigger treatment plant also?
Yes, sir. And if we do add another secondary pond, which is what we're asking for help with, we also have to upgrade the existing ponds. They need improvement, too, and they have to be brought up to today's standards.
Okay. Any questions of the committee? Okay. All right. We'll try and get this on the list, see what happens. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Are you done now?
Yes, Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I don't
know.
Before they leave the table, could I ask one question?
Wait, guys. Mayor, hang on 1 second. Senator Parasol.
I just have one question. Maybe Senator Olson can answer it. But is there acquisition of land necessary for the secondary pond, or do you already have it acquired?
We have the land right there. As it is now, we've got three ponds, and we're looking at putting the fourth pond up in this area here. However, you can't just build one dike. You have to raise the standards and increase the linings on all the existing ponds, too.
Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, guys, very much.
Thanks again.
Senator Lurie has assured me he will be brief. All right, okay. Welcome to the committee, Senator Lurie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. Moving so fast this year, I have Senate File X in front of you. We don't have a number for it yet, but it'll be coming shortly. I believe you should have a bill draft in front of you. This is for the historic Hinckley Fire Monument. I have had scheduled two witnesses. Sandy Hines, the manager of the Hinckley Fire Museum, is with me here today. She'll have much more history of this effort than I, but City Administrator and Clerk Jim Osmus got the cold that's going around up there. So I'll tell you a little bit about the state monument and why we're here asking for $40,000 for preservation of this state monument that is really a centerpiece of our regional history. I mean, I can tell you from growing up in that area, about 50 miles north of here, two school districts away, I did my third or fourth grade project on the Hinckley Fire. I tried to find the little box with the kids running around and stuff in it. I couldn't find it. But anyway, it is truly a regional.
What was running around?
Yeah, little kids running around, fire, flames. Oh, okay. You know, it was a big. I actually won a prize on it. I thought Senator Mom would have kept it, but anyway, I didn't.
Senator Mom, what?
Anyway, it truly is. Thousands of acres burned. Over 400 people died, and there are 284 people buried in a mass unmarked grave at the site. Definitely an event in the state's history worth commemorating, and the state did see fit to build a really wonderful monument in 1900 to commemorate the Great Hinckley Fire. And so it's been standing for over 100 years now, and it's been a little bit of a frustrating last few years for the monument. It was slated to be in the bonding package in 2000. There's no question as to the dire need to get repairs to this to this monument, but there is some question as to ownership of the land itself that the monument sits on, which has raised some questions about the propriety of use of bonding requests. And we, the state of Minnesota, really owe it to the local community of Hinckley to figure this out and find a way to get these needed repairs. The latest, so again, that was 2000. The latest review that we sent around was done in 2004, and the monument was shown to be in poor to fair condition with the joints beginning to fail. And things are going to start moving. It's become a real aesthetic and even a public safety and a growing public safety concern in our local community. And so, again, Sandy is going to have much more detail about the history than me, but I'm really hoping that we can, again, find a way to clear up some of these issues and figure out a way to get up and preserve our state's monument to this regional issue. Sandy?
Ms. Hines, please identify yourself for the record.
All right. I'm Sandra Hines, a representative from the Hinckley area and manager of the Hinckley Fire Museum. I have my written notes, so I'm going to read them first because you frightened me a little, and then we'll go from there.
Don't. We're just like
Mr.
Tony.
Chair, yeah,
we're just like Tony, honestly.
Okay. Okay. Good afternoon, distinguished members of the committee. I have mentioned my name is Sandra Hines. I'm the manager of the Hinckley Fire Museum at Hinckley, and I'm here today as a spokesman for a local committee formed to answer the dilapidated condition of the Hinckley Fire Monument on the outskirts of our city. Many people will testify to this committee in the coming weeks about new money to be included in the bonding bill, but we're requesting funds for the work that was not done in the year 2000. And let me explain. In 1900, a monument was built by the state of Minnesota on the east side of Hinckley to commemorate the Great Hinckley Fire of 1894. More than 400 people died in the fire. 246 of those victims are buried at the mass grave at Hinckley. In the year 2000, the most recent of a number of requests, the group of citizens from Hinckley approached the Minnesota Historical Society and asked that it take steps to conserve and repair the monument, which is owned by the state of Minnesota and under their care. And the process began. The 2000 bonding bill included funds to repair various state historic markers and monuments. Incidentally, you have 26 historical monuments under your care that have to do with the history of our great state. Anyway, at the time, the State Historical Preservation Field Services and Grants Department wrote to us, that's in 2000, saying, quote, "We are now in the process of fine-tuning the work plan for this appropriation and obtaining estimates for needed repairs." There was joy in Hinckley. "I will get back to you when the work plan is completed and there is more information to report," unquote. It's been 8 years and nobody has called. So we're here again. All right. In 2005, the Minnesota Historical Society hired a conservation firm, Conservation Solutions, Inc. of Washington, D.C., to evaluate and offer treatment recommendations for our monument, the Hinckley Fire Monument, along with 26 others. At that time, the monument's condition was rated poor to fair, and the consultants recommended immediate repairs because they feared catastrophic loss. Much of the lead used to hold the granite blocks together has fallen apart, and the granite pavers along the base of the monument are a tripping hazard for the visitors. Last year, the Historical Society sent out a representative to meet with the members of the Hinckley community. The manager of Outreach Services Historic Preservation Department, Timothy Glines, came to Hinckley at the request of Light the Night Committee, which had been established to improve and upgrade the Veterans Memorial, light the Hinckley Fire Monument from dusk until dawn, and landscape the whole area. Other than receiving permission to illuminate the monument, no commitments were made and no action has been taken. Now, we're not talking about a small thing here. This monument is 52 feet tall. It weighs 60 tons. Its gradations of granite, one on top of the other, held together by leading. The estimated cost of the repairs is $40,000. The monument has deteriorated further in the past 3 years and requires immediate attention for both aesthetic and safety reasons. Members of this committee, I'm sure, would be asking if the community of Hinckley is committed to the monument and willing to do its part to support this effort. Indeed, we already have. In 2007, a committee of the Hinckley Fire Museum members, the VFW, the American Legion, the Lions Club, the City of Hinckley, and many other citizens raised more than $20,000 and received $20,000 in labor. The result? New flagpoles, lighting for the monument, a refurnished gazebo, newly painted posts, chains, concrete walkways, landscapes with trees and bushes and flowers and benches where people can sit and contemplate the historic significance of the site. The winding walkway ends at the still deteriorating monument. To recap, the monument is the property and the responsibility of the state. The monument has been re-evaluated by experts who call for immediate repairs. The committee has already invested $40,000 of its own to refurbish the site surrounding the monument. So we feel it's time for the state of Minnesota to do its part with a specific allocation of funds and force of law to act so that this historic site is preserved. Ladies and gentlemen of the committee, we ask you today to appropriate the necessary funds with specific instructions to the Minnesota Historical Society Historic Preservation Office to complete the repairs in a timely manner. I've included some other things here. I want to talk about the Hinckley Fire, so you're going to have to listen. But we'll let our senator say something first. I will be very brief. Okay.
No, we don't even know about the fire, because we know about the fire. But
to go through the museum to do that.
In fact, we had a fire in Chisholm in 1908.
Yes, you did, in 1908.
Burned down the whole town.
That's true.
And in fact, we celebrate fire days all the time. So where is this exactly? Because I only go to Toby's. That's as far as I ever get when I go to
Okay, now if you go to Toby's, you go out of the parking lot toward the casino. That may be another familiar historic site for some of you. And it's just about two blocks away.
Okay, all right. Okay. Senator Metzen.
That begs the question, have you asked the casino for a little help on this?
We have asked the casino. They gave us money toward the $40,000. This, however, is a state monument, and this is your baby, say. But we've already done quite a bit.
I was hoping it could be part of their baby, too.
Well, they have given us money already through the, for this initial repair situation.
Senator Dibble.
I'm sorry if I missed it, but what happened to all the money that we appropriated before my time, actually, in 2000? Do we know, or Mr. Kelleher here?
The letter says they were going to take care of it, but apparently they didn't. All right. Mr. Kelleher, did you take care of it, or what happened, Jared?
It's your fault.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm David Kelleher from the Minnesota Historical Society. A couple of points I'd like to make on this. I don't think anyone would disagree on the need for repairs on this particular monument or any of the other monuments around the state or historic sites that are in need of preservation. I think you all did some touring over the summer and fall and saw historic sites that are in serious need of repair. The question here with this monument is the source of funding. And this particular bill requests money from the bond fund. And as you all know, in order to use bond funds, which was this bill as well as the funding that was appropriated in 2000 that was part of the Historic Sites Asset Preservation, there are restrictions in the state's constitution and statutes as to the use of those bond funds. And the first restriction is that a property being improved has to be publicly owned. We have been trying to establish who actually owns this monument. It would seem that it's owned by the state, but we do not have a clear title that would say that. So rather than misuse state bond funds, we have held back on using bond funds. I think that we can work with Senator Lori and members of the committee to to see. I know general fund dollars are tight these days, but general fund dollars have far fewer restrictions than bond funds and would be certainly a good way to use those funds for this particular site. We did send a staff person up to the Pine County Courthouse to see what he could find as far as the land records and I think the county recorder's office with the help of staff there. They were not able to figure out that this was actually owned by either the state of Minnesota or some other public entity. So.
Okay. Senator Metzen.
Can't you, it's been a while since I've been in the real estate business, but what's it called, quiet the title, or can't you publish something for a while and get the title cleared up so the state owns it? I mean, that's not the end of the world, I don't think.
Sure. When I did some research on that, it's considered state property even by the county. In 1966 plat, it says state cemetery. The church that held the property, it was like commandeered. 1894, you have hundreds of bodies that have to be buried.
What I'm thinking is maybe the Senator Olson or some other attorney on the committee, there's ways to, is it called quiet title, to clear it up and to just get it done. I don't care what it was before.
No, I don't either.
Here we are today. Get the title cleared up. Give it to the state. And then I think it's appropriate. That is a regional significance of the building.
Yes, sir.
I go by it 20 times a year. And I'm not going to the casino anymore.
On the way back. On the way back.
I happen to just have a heck of a lawsuit one of these days when that thing.
Yes, we're very fearful. You've got the basically what's called the grouting, and it's lidded. It's hanging down the side.
Mr. Chairman, excuse me. Why don't we try to get the title cleared so then the state can appropriately help you folks? And I'm one that would like to help you. And that was a major deal. Statewide significant.
You know, Senator Metzen, it occurs to me that if we quiet the title, we quiet the issue.
Well, that's
good.
If we correct the issue, if we help it.
That would be fun. However, it's done.
Okay, Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, I don't know if that would be the Attorney General's office or who would act on behalf of the state, but I would think that if there is an issue about ownership, then a quiet title action could resolve that.
You guys can work together on this.
Mr. Chairman, we've had some recent conversations with the Attorney General's office to get some guidance on this, and we will certainly look into doing quieting the title or whatever we need to do. But we've gotten started on doing that. And
Mr. Chairman, gotten as far
Senator
as we've
Metzen.
One of the problems with this legislation is this is probably the smallest request I've seen in 20 years around here. You're going to ask for bigger numbers.
We just didn't know how to approach it, you know.
Could you write a check while you're writing by the
I can take up a collection, sir, if you'd like it that way.
Senator Laurie.
We're asking for $90 million for the Minnesota sex offender program in Moose Lake. Is that big enough?
That's big enough. Okay. Thank you very much.
One last question. How is the museum itself doing? I mean, is that in pretty good shape? You haven't come forward with any question on the museum.
Okay. We're a nonprofit. We get no funding from the state, the county, the city. I've been working there for 14 years. The first 10 years I worked for $5 an hour gross. I am the only employee. So we are dancing fast. There's no doubt about that. This
I think
is
it's
such
a fascinating museum.
It really is. It's a marvelous story. And you can approach it on the level of the human experience, what happens in a disaster. I talk to kids and say, you know, heroes aren't Spider-Man on the wall. Heroes are regular people doing the right thing at the right time. And I can point to the engineer whose hand is burning on the throttle of the train trying to have people escape, to the black porter that keeps everyone calm, to people running for the train, throwing babies so that they can be saved. A 4.5-mile-high firewall, visible as far away as Mason City, Iowa. It's an incredible story, and we can't let it go. We've got to do something. We've got to keep the monument. We've got to keep the museum going. Where do we go? Who do we ask? Here we are. What avenues do we have? Very few. Our needs are small, but it's a big problem.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And just so you know, Senator Olson's three bills took less time than your one bill. Okay,
just I know. It wasn't as brief as I had intended.
He had a handicap there, Chairman Tomasini.
Okay, but Senator Sachs, I've got people from up north. Oh,
right. Chairman, just a call. Yeah. I think if we decided to fund this effort, it would be obviously contingent upon clear title. There would be that condition.
Or there would have to be general fund money instead of bond money. Okay. And Senator Sackhoff's got some people from far away, too. That's why we're taking Senator Sackhoff right now. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you say, there's snow falling up there, we hope. New information, this particular file on the Grand Rapids North Central Technologies Lab is Senate File 2661.
Oh, yeah? Is that a number?
Ms. Chair and members, this binding request is for $6 million for a state-of-the-art research and development facility on the campus of Itasca Community College, with the probability of a lease coming out of the University of Minnesota, which, of course, operates a branch on the same campus. The North Central Technology Lab is uniquely situated and located to address the energy challenges related to wood. Located in Grand Rapids, the heart of the wood basket of northern Minnesota, it has the potential to be a public-private partnership between University of Minnesota, Itasca Community College, Minnesota Power, the Blandin Foundation, and the wood products industry, which includes UPM, Blandin, Kimony, and Ainsworth. The lab will address everything from biomass, which with our renewable 2525, Minnesota Power has said that biomass is going to be a part of their strategy, to cellulosic biofuels, which the second and third generations of biofuels certainly include wood. With me to explain the project is Kirk Boostrom, Project Director of the North Central Technology Lab.
Welcome, Boostrom. Please say your name for the record.
Kirk Boostrom, representing the North Central Technology Laboratory.
Please, go ahead.
Chairman and committee members, thank you very much for listening to us today about this project. The North Central Technology Laboratory project is actually a project that the legislature has seen in the past. In 2005, the project was initially brought before the legislature for a request to develop an initial concept for a joint research center for the UPM North American Research Center and the University of Minnesota, which has a North Central Research and Outreach Center in Grand Rapids on the Itasca Community College campus. The purpose of the initiative today is to create the North Central Technology Laboratory as a world-class collaborative research and technology innovation program and center located in the heart of North Central Minnesota, with the purpose to improve the competitive position of the region's natural resource products industry by facilitating growth through training and research, boosting business growth by advancing bio-based innovations, and stimulating partnerships between local industry, state academic and research institutions, and government entities. The primary focus of activities at this facility will be in support of next-generation biofuels research and development and workforce training and education for natural resource-based industry. When the initial bonding request was made to the legislature in 2005, we received through the Grand Rapids Economic Development Authority approximately $192,000 from the state to pursue pre-design and planning and feasibility, which was done throughout 2006 and then completed in January 2007. So we have the pre-design work done and the feasibility work done on the project. And we're looking to pursue the project starting in 2009 for construction and design, complete design. The project is unique, as Senator Sachs mentioned, in that it does represent a public-private partnership. There's a number of partners, including the University of Minnesota and Itasca Community College, which is a Minsky institution, as well as forest products industry partners on the steering group as well. It provides an opportunity for collaborative research and also an opportunity to diversify the economic base through research innovations and commercialization of developing technologies coming both from industry as well as the University of Minnesota. The region, the Grand Rapids-Itasca region, is already a regional forest-based economic development hub. We've got a key industry base from which to work from to develop new technologies that focus on biomass conversion, renewable energy, and biofuels development. And as well, we also have a proximity to the resource. Grand Rapids and Itasca County is right in the wood belt of Minnesota, and there's a number of private industry partners that work with us on this type of research. The college system has Itasca Community College has an engineering program on the campus at Itasca Community College that would be directly adjacent to this site. They're committed to working with us for experiential learning opportunities for students to work on research with private industry partners as well as the University of Minnesota. Are currently developing opportunities in bio-based innovations and renewable energy with advancements in research and development coming out of the university and industry. Minnesota and this region in particular are uniquely situated to exploit these opportunities in the commercialization of bio-based innovations and renewable energy technologies. The state also has a commitment to renewable energy, which we think we can take advantage of working through our partnerships with industry and public partners in this project. In conclusion, this region and the NCTL project partners are uniquely situated to lead the way on the state, national, international scene for forest-derived biomass technology innovations. The partners are in place and committed to advance these new technologies and diversify the area's economy. Continuing to take a leadership role in the forest products industry, forest policy, and stewardship, and new innovations in renewable energy and bio-based technologies. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Is the EDA moving something from downtown? Is that the intention? Is there a facility downtown where they're doing some experimentation now that the EDA is moving out to the campus?
No, not that I'm aware of.
No? Okay.
No, but tell him about the technology center. That's what he's talking about.
Okay.
I represent, as well, one of the project partners, Itasca Technology Exchange, which is a partnership between Iron Range Resources and Itasca Economic Development Corporation that was started back in 1999 to incubate technology companies, primarily in information technology, and to pursue a strategy to diversify the area's economy. We've been doing that since 1999 and have a strong track record of working with incubation and technology. We see this as an opportunity to do some of the same kind of work with new technologies, but in a different venue.
Okay. Any questions of the committee? Okay. Senator Saxog?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay,
next.
Thank you.
Senator File 2582.
Got a number on that one, too. Good job.
Good job.
Is this what it talks about here?
Senator Saxog.
Mr. Chair and members, this is a request for $860,000 from the City of Coleraine for downtown corridor redevelopment. So in the early 20th century, when the Western Mesaba Iron Range was being opened to mining, a planned community was built on the shores of Big Trout Lake in Itasca County, and that village was Coleraine. And now I think we know the Western Mesaba is opening up with the Minnesota Steel Project and the expansion of the U.S. Steel Taconite plant at Keewatin. And I think we're worried that Coleraine's going to need a little renovation, too. And so that's what this project's all about. And with me today is Mayor John Sloan of Coleraine. And he's going to give a brief presentation and answer any questions you might have.
Mayor Sloan, before you get started, you know, one of the things that confuses people down here all the time is who's Greenway and who's Coleraine? And I know the difference, but why don't you explain to them that what Greenway is so that everybody knows what's going on here.
Well, interestingly, that leads us in. Well, Mr. Chair and committee members.
And say your name for the record first.
I'm Mayor John Sloan of Coleraine. Because the project we're asking for fronts the high school, but Coleraine is simply the location of Greenway High School, which is the high school of a school district of about seven small Iron Range towns on the western end of the Iron Range. It's kind of an interesting situation where it's a school that when I was in high school, we had almost 200 kids in a class, and yet we were a town of 1,200 people. Mm-hmm. So we were able to play with Chisholm and Hibbing and Grand Rapids and International Falls. In fact, we won a state tournament in 67 and 68 in hockey. But anyway, Coleraine is the town, Greenway is the high school. John C., and this leads into my presentation here too. John C. Greenway was the superintendent of U.S. Steel, and he laid out Coleraine in 1906. In other words, U.S. Steel laid out the town, designed it, platted it, and built it. And if I can go into my presentation.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, yeah.
What's kind of interesting is Coleraine was built from scratch, kind of like a Silver Bay or a Babbitt up on the Iron Range. So the town didn't evolve along a highway. So our main street was never, to my knowledge anyway, never part of the county or state highway system. So any improvements that we make, or maintenance or improvements that we make to that street, are solely the responsibility of Coleraine. And that's pretty tough because, you know, streets are very expensive right now. But that's the significance of that. Coleraine is a town of 1,100 people. We've got roughly 450 residences. And I bring that up because that's pretty much what our tax base is. It's a single industry town, mining. There's no mining done in Coleraine right now. Some of you are aware of the Canisteo Pit Lake water problem. That's a consequence of it. The mining is done. The pit's filled up with water. So there's no tax stream or revenue base off of mining activity in Coleraine right now. The street problem, and I do appreciate some of you actually came to Coleraine and met with the city council. The street problem is that the main street of Coleraine has deteriorated so bad that we can't even paint the curbs to warn people where not to park, but we can't even paint them. We've actually had to paint where the pieces of the slabs of the squares of the sidewalk come together. They've come apart, so we've actually had to paint that to warn people so they don't trip over it. It's a safety and a revitalization combined problem. So far, there has been some revitalization. It's been all private. The local Greenway Business Association has put up all new signage in town. In particular along the main street, and they've planted some fairly mature trees, like the 15 feet tall trees. So they've committed towards the revitalization privately. I just need to add in, Coleraine as a city is very willing to come forward with funding for projects. Problem is we're just so overextended. Like I mentioned, it's a town of 1,100 people. We did a water treatment plant in 2002. We're still paying $1.25 million on that, and it won't be paid off until 2022. Our annual payment on that is like $68,000 a year. The old highway through town is being improved by the county, so we don't have any control over this. We need to come forward with water and sewer investments. So we're having to borrow $185,000 later on this year for water and sewer improvements there. In 2009, there's a wastewater treatment plant improvement required for the joint powers of Coleraine, Bovee, and Taconite. Our share of that is $416,000. These are 450 homes. 40 of those homes are in new TIF districts where the improvements have been done somewhat privately, but we don't get any tax revenue off of these homes. All of the money is going towards the improvements, and we won't get money off of them until like 2024. So I'm just trying to illustrate how constrained we are to help ourselves. Our request in this particular project is for a complete rebuild of the street, curb and gutter, and sidewalk to the tune of like $860,000 would be half of it. We're committed to see the project through if we can get that type of assistance from the state. We understand that you've got a lot of other important projects as well, but I just don't know what we'll be able to do without some help on that.
Well, Mayor, I've been downtown Coleraine, and I think that's where I blew out my ball joint on my car. So I know you need this very badly. I know that for sure. And you know, we do have a local road improvement program in the bonding bill, and this might be I don't know if you've thought about applying through that or not, but since this is a bonding project and that is in the bonding bill, that might be a real logical place to go look for this money if it's possible. So I don't know, Senator Sachs and I will work on that and figure out.
One reason why this came through this committee is our city engineer brought it to us saying that apparently part of the criteria here was to try to help Main Street, and I think that's all this came about.
Okay.
Appreciate that.
Are there any questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very
drive
much.
Carefully on the way home.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Okay.
Thank you. Who's farthest away now?
I think I would.
It's Kubli. Let's see.
I'm about 150 miles.
150. How far are you? Bergen's farthest? She's got her hands on her hip. Bergen, get up here.
Mr. Chair, I would like to advocate on behalf of Senator Bergen.
No, we just did. She had her hand on her hip.
Thank you, Senator Fishbach. I can use all the help I can get.
Sharon, how far away are you? Okay, we're doing the right thing here. All
right. 81.
No storm.
Senator Bergen.
Mr. Chair, there's no doubt in my mind you'll do the right thing. I appreciate being here and being in front of your committee. Thank you to all of you for hearing Senate File 1353. I have with me the clerk from the city of Clear Lake, and Marilyn Bujalski and I have known each other probably longer than either one of us wants to admit we've known each other, because it's a lot of years. And I also have the mayor of Clearwater, Mayor Lee Monk. And interestingly enough, his brother and I were on township boards at the same time. And when his brother decided not to be the legislative and research officer for Sherburne County Townships, I took that position. So it's fun to be here with him. And one of the council members from Clear Lake, Tim Gunner. And behind me is Tony Strand, the Clear Lake wastewater treatment facilities operator, and Bob Stavrin, the Clearwater public facilities operator. So we have all the expertise in the room you need. This is a really important project. It's different than most of them that you've heard, in that these are two very small towns, and the Mississippi River runs between them. And that provides some obstacles that are tough to get around. But in the past, these cities have come together, worked very hard to do the right thing, and their wastewater treatment facility is shared in spite of the fact that it crosses the Mississippi River. Not only do they not have room for expansion with their wastewater treatment facilities at this point in time, but they don't. They also have some problems that they've had to fix already. They've had to do over $2 million in interim work just to meet current compliance with what they have. So there's no room for growth. They're just barely meeting compliance and have constant problems. But because the state has some pretty tough mandates for anything that runs into the river, which we have to have, we all know that, it creates a problem for two small towns. By the way, the population between the two towns is less than 2,000 people. And yet the total cost of Phase 1 and Phase 2 of this project will be over $14 million in order to meet all of the state requirements. So I'm going to let them take it from there, but I kind of wanted to lay some background about these two small towns and what kind of things they're up against. So I believe the mayor is going to go first.
Mayor, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record, please.
Lee Monk, Mayor of Clearwater. Thank you very much, Chairman Tomasina, Senators.
That was the worst I've ever heard.
Would you like me to try it again?
I would normally let it go, but that was so bad I can't let that one go.
Let me try Tomasoni.
Made it sound like a feminine.
No, go ahead, Mayor.
Mr. Chair, I think
Monk's
Senator
an easy one. I can do that.
It is. Yeah. When you've got two syllables, it makes it easy. In May of 2006, we were put on a moratorium from any future building by the MPCA. We'd had a problem with some of our ponds, because when you get to a certain level, and especially in the wintertime, the bugs stop working. Don't know if all of you know that or not. So you run into an extreme difficulty. The MPCA put a hold on us. We had that for a year until we could get ourselves together and start coming up with something that was going to enable us to continue building homes, to try and increase our population, to increase our tax revenue. in April of 07 with the help of Senator Wergen. We were able to remove that because we had in place a plan of having a good system put in place by this winter so that we could continue to manage the wastewater treatment and keep our level below the state requirements. In order to do that, as Senator Wergen mentioned, it cost us about $2 million. All of you have a copy of this. If you look at the project impact summary, with if we get state assistance of $2.1 million, you can see that the estimated monthly bill per household affordable index will be $84. That's a big hit for any household.
That'd be the water bill?
No, that's the sewer bill.
Sewer bill.
That's just the sewer bill. If we get...
Per month?
Per month.
And Mr. Chair, that's if they get the state help. Yes. Without the state help, it's way more.
For communities like Clear Lake and Clearwater to keep the billing within other communities throughout the nation, the average, the monthly sewer bill is approximately $38. And so you can see the $84 is considerably more. We have zero money this year for roads in our town. This is a necessity. I know that you've heard a lot of other people, and they all have wonderful projects. This is a necessity. And I just call upon the committee to give it favorable consideration. I'm going to ask Marilyn to give you some more detail because she's been involved in this project much longer than I have.
Thank you, Mayor.
Makes me sound Bajalski. Very old. My name is Marilyn Bajalski. I'm the city clerk for the city of Clear Lake. I'm also a member of the Joint Sewer Board and have served in that capacity since 1998. In 1998-9, we began looking at expansion of the existing aerated pond system. We have, in 95, they did an expansion that was completed in 97 that changed the ponds to aerated system. That was estimated to give us a 20-year growth. It didn't give us even 10. The growth in our area exploded far faster than anyone visualized. I think we're in one of the largest, fastest-growing building corridors in the state of Minnesota at that time, and we continue to be that. I know right now there is a current building slump, but we have development pressures. The city of Clear Lake, which I represent and has a population of 485 people, have two major developments there, one with 166 housing units, another of 156 housing units. We can't allow those developments to continue unless we can get additional capacity. In 2006 or 2005, when the MPCA determined that we were in violation, they gave us a stipulation agreement. We had to create an interim facility in order just to get into compliance with the standards we have to meet. We have a frozen discharge limit to the Mississippi River, which was established in 1984. With the current treatment system that we had, the aerated ponds, growth would not allow us to meet the standards. And continuing standards keep coming down. We have to meet new levels of treatment. The water that we have to discharge to that river has to get cleaner and cleaner and cleaner. That, of course, is something you absolutely want to do. Both cities are determined to do that. The problem is the technology that allows us to do that is way more expensive than any of us could have anticipated back when we started to do this. We have explored every option available to us. We've looked at rapid infiltration basins. We've looked at other forms of technology, mechanical plants. Everything is in the multiple millions of dollars. A community of 485 people can't handle multiple millions of dollars in taxes and burden. They currently pay very high water and sewer bills. We have adjusted our rates. We continue to do that. We monitor the costs. We're doing everything that we know how to do. We've applied for PFA funding. We have also looked at other grant sources that our engineers have showed us. We so far have not been eligible for anything. We are coming to you almost as a last resort. These are two small communities that, through no fault of their own, have kind of ended up, because of where we have to discharge, we've ended up in a critical situation. We need to grow. Communities don't survive if they don't grow. And especially in the building corridor that we're in, with the I-94 crossing coming between both of our communities, we're going to have to provide sewer and water to the businesses that likely will be built in that area when that comes through. North Star Corridor is another thing that's looking for a train station in our city. We have to provide sewer and water. And we, right now, water is not the problem for us, but the sewer is. Tony is here, and he can answer any questions you might have about the technical side of the new wastewater capacity we're looking for. We have two issues: the interim wastewater treatment plant, which is under construction now, ready to go online very soon. That will do the kind of treatment we need, but it doesn't give us the capacity. That's the reason we need to go to the phase one. Those plans have been submitted to the MPCA at the end of January. Hopefully we can move forward with that. It's something that we have to do to have our communities continue to grow.
Ms. Bajalski, did you say you don't qualify for PFA funding?
We do.
Yeah. We're sixth on the PFA.
Yeah, we are sixth on the PFA funding list, I believe.
Okay. All right, okay. All right, I'm going to get to you in a second. But anyway, so you will be getting some funding, provided that we provide enough, I would think. But this is, we keep hearing these kind of stories from just about every community in the state of Minnesota, and it's either a result of new regulations, aging equipment, or expansion of population. And everybody's got, I personally think we're not putting enough money into this, and I think somewhere along the way we've got to make some decisions to make our bonding bills even bigger than they are now, because I believe our capacity to bond at higher levels is there if we want to do it. We just have to have the willingness to do it, because we need to actually solve a lot of these problems as opposed to letting them go and letting the local people suffer the way they are and paying more and more all the time and at the risk of not being able to live in their homes. I mean, it's getting out of hand, and we got to do something about it. Senator Kubley.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment on that too, Mr. Chair. You know, if you remember when Governor Ventura was in office, he line item vetoed this wastewater infrastructure funding, two bonding bills in a row. And so I think, you know, with the list doubled in size during his administration. So I think that's a primary reason that we have so many communities asking for this kind of help now.
Yeah, we need to do it. And even if it means putting more money in than we're accustomed to.
Yeah.
I mean, we had a $1 billion bonding bill in 1998. I would think we can have $1.5 billion in 2008, but I understand we're not going there, but I think we need to, if you want to know the honest to God truth. Does anybody else want to comment? Are your witnesses, Senator Wergen, or?
Unless Councilman Gunner wanted to say something.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. My name is Tim Gunner, City of Clear Lake, council member.
Welcome.
I'd just like to add that we do have a lot of low-income families in Clear Lake and Clearwater. We sure need your help. Thank you.
You know, that's good testimony, right? Okay, any further questions? Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate you coming.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you
very much.
Who won the flip here? Sharon or Kubley? Who won the flip?
How far are you?
I'm about 130, but my witness is a little further.
Senator Kubley.
Can't you tell she has such an
honest
face?
I don't know.
Welcome, Senator Kubley.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. You know, this bill for the Yellow Medicine County Agricultural Museum was visited by the bonding committee, and I think they certainly have some needs there. They operate on a fairly small budget, but you'll get some things in their packet that kind of tells the story. But with me today is Mr. Tim Valdi from Hanley Falls, Minnesota, and that's the location of the museum. But he'll give you a little better rundown on the bill and the needs of the museum.
Welcome.
Senator and committee, my name is Tim Valdi from Hanley Falls, Minnesota. I'm on the board of the museum. I can give you a brief background on the museum itself. The museum is located in Hanley Falls, Minnesota. It's in a 1939 concrete WPA building. The school was closed in the late 60s. And in 1980, this was opened as an agriculture museum. We've been operating for 27 years. What kind of got this going, there are three floors to the museum. The upper two floors are used for display area, and we have handicapped accessibility issues since it's building with stairways, and we were looking to put an elevator, try to get funding for an elevator. The Yellow Medicine County hired an architect, veteran Johnson's, to come in and do an assessment. After their assessment, one of the things they pointed out to us is that the electrical system in there is the original 1939 electrical system. And they said we need to upgrade the electrical system before we can do anything else, and also take care of some moisture issues in the basement.
That knob and tube wiring?
It's buried in the concrete with the old plug fuses down in the basement.
Okay.
And so that's the first. They said that's the first need we have before we try to get an elevator. Through Representative Colin Peterson, we've applied for federal funding, hopefully for the elevator portion. I'm not sure how successful we will be on that. The federal government says they're almost more broke than the state of Minnesota, and so we're hoping we can get some funding there. Yellow Medicine County has come forward, paid for the study, and the architects. They've paid for many of the upgrades and things we've had to do in the museum, but a project like this is beyond what the county can afford to do, and that's why we've come to Senator Kubley and to you to ask for funding. We're asking for $200,000. Which will take care of the electrical system and what the architect said was a moisture problem in the lower floor where the electrical system is located.
So if the electrical system were to cause a fire, how much would it cost to rebuild that place?
I'm not sure it could be possible. Not only that, but the contents are... many of the things in couldn't be duplicated. If you look through, I included the brochure that we hand out and then also a 25-year history book that we put together 2 years ago on the museum. It tells a lot about the museum. So a couple of the neat things that we have school tours every spring. We have, depending on the school, third, fourth, or fifth grade students come over, and at that time we have volunteers from the community come into the museum and station themselves in different locations, and the students are able to ask the older people if they, you know, how this was used on the farm. Real good exchange between the senior citizens and the students. Something that I didn't think was funny, but everybody else did. I was standing next to an antique tractor. It was a 1917 model tractor, and I was explaining this to one of the kids, and one of the students asked me if I bought it new, which I didn't find particularly funny. But so, but there are some good exchanges.
Could have
also
been a backhanded compliment. You never know. Yes,
but I think the intergenerational part, you know, is very interesting. Every spring when we do that, we have special events throughout the year. The one problem we have, like I say, is we're working towards getting an elevator. A lot of the people who come to visit are senior citizens and aren't able to negotiate the stairways, and that's how we got started working down this road.
Mr. Veldy, some of these pictures in here are action photos. Do any demonstrations when the kids come for tours and stuff?
Yes, yeah. Yes. We try to, each year we try to do something different, have a different piece of equipment. We've also done butter churning with the old-fashioned butter churn and have made some butter ahead of time so the kids get to put some butter on a saltine cracker and eat fresh butter, and probably hopefully nobody from the health department's here right now, but we're very careful when we do that. But we try to demonstrate things for the students that are simple and easy and fast, so they can see how things were done years ago.
Is there a radius from how far around people come to the museum?
We have a sign-in sheet where people can sign in when they come in. We're open May through September. Special events, we have a thrashing show. We usually try to get an antique car show, things like that. And those events probably draw between 2,500 and 3,000 people on a couple of weekends when we have that. The town itself is 250 people, so it gets to be a little crowded. But throughout the year, we have anywhere from 1,000 to 1,200 people that come to town specifically to visit the museum and sign our guest book. So they're from, usually we have a representative from representing about 30 different states.
Pretty neat. Okay, any questions from the committee?
What's the age of the museum? Did we get the age
Center
of the Parisel. Museum?
The museum itself, the building is a 1939 museum. It was a schoolhouse. Museum itself has been in operation since 1980, so we've completed 27 years and we're entering 28. We have the school building, which you'll see on the cover of the book here. We also have three steel structures on the grounds that house antique tractors, antique cars, and other farm equipment.
How old does a tractor have to be in order to be considered an antique?
If you have one, we would consider it an antique if you were favorable to us. We have a lot of tractors on display, from steam engines and the huge Minneapolis, the Twin City tractors with the 12-foot high steering tires, and all the way up to, I suppose, in the middle to late 50s right now.
Okay.
Your age.
Do you have a question?
No.
Okay. Any further comments?
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess just one comment I don't think Mr. Veldy mentioned. When the electrical inspector was there, he told them that their electrical system was where it needed to be. It needed to be in a museum.
Just one other thing I thought of here for as far as community support. We have just over 200 what we call lifetime members who are regular contributors to the museum. We have 13 businesses that contribute every year. Corporate members, we have them, and then we have 20 people who are, I guess you'd call, ongoing sustaining members that are generous every year with us, and we operate on a $21,000 allotment from Yellow Medicine County, and the rest comes in from fundraisers and donations for about a $45,000 operating budget. So, okay.
Comments, Senator?
No, is Gary Veldy your good-looking brother?
Cousin.
Oh, he's a nice-looking boy. I see him right here.
Yeah.
Thank you for that contribution, Senator Metzen.
Thank you.
We appreciate that. Okay. There's no further questions. Thank you very much. And
thank
we'll,
you.
We'll figure this out.
Thank you, Mr. Sharon,
thank
members.
Thank you, Senator Gubley. Senator Sharon.
Where's me?
Thank you for your patience. We had a snow day up north, so we had to get everybody through.
Yes.
So.
Being told it's snow, it was snow, snow day tomorrow. But this is great.
What?
I think tomorrow will be our snow day.
Tomorrow?
Let's get 46 today.
Senator Sharon, welcome.
Well, thank you. Is it Senator Tumasani, I understand?
No, you know, how much did you want?
I don't know if you can hear. We're here today to talk about a project in Mankato. It's a request for $1.2 million for pre-design and design dollars for the Mankato Civic Center for the purposes of equipping an addition to the Civic Center for a women's hockey exposition center that will be utilized by Minnesota State University. I know you've been meeting here a long time. You're tired. These projects sound to have common themes in them, so I want to crystallize the critical points for you in relationship to our specific request. And I have with me the city manager of Mankato, Pat Henches, who will fill in details for you. The existing Mankato Civic Center is an interesting history that makes it unique, I think. And it's 15 years ago, as a city council member, I was here at the Capitol requesting sales tax, an ability to use local option sales tax for a hockey arena civic center in the Mankato area. This $25 million project that was built in Mankato was completely funded by local dollars. And it was a partnership between the city of Mankato and Minnesota State University in order to help resolve some issues they had around practice areas and a movement towards Division I hockey. That's what's unique about Mankato's hockey arena, that it's been totally funded by local dollars, and then we partner. So when we're talking about the scoring for these projects, I noted that in the evaluation of this project, there was some discussion about whether or not it was just regional or statewide significance, and is it related to the statewide mission. So I wanted to make that point, that this really is a partnership between a regional use and also the state university system. So this is a project that was developed completely by local dollars. All we asked for was the opportunity to raise that money locally. We also later, as a community, used local resources to make improvements to our other arena, which is called All Seasons Arena. It's a small arena in our area that's used for, you know, figure skating and local Maha hockey games. And the women's hockey team and the men's hockey team from MSU would use, again, our local facility for their practice rinks. And more, you know, closing down the time or making it not very good times for young people to be in those arenas. So we made an expansion there in order to provide more ice time for the hockey at MSU, the Minnesota State University of Mankato, to have practice time there. In the original agreement, which was a partnership with MNSCU, the state would pay a lease agreement and some operating costs for our arena. Since then, however, MNSCU has stopped paying the operating costs for the utilization of MSU hockey for our arena. They continue to pay the lease payments, but the operating costs are completely absorbed by the city of Mankato. That is what's unique about our facility, as opposed to some of the other facilities that have been funded with state dollars.
Who gets the revenue from the hockey games?
Chairman, the state or the Minnesota State gets the majority of the revenue from the hockey.
But they don't contribute?
They contribute
the lease.
That. they contribute in the form of a lease. But the point, I think, that Senator Sharon was attempting to make is that that lease, similar to, for example, and I'm very familiar with this first facility, St. Cloud State, the hockey arena there, receives a institutional support for operating that arena. That's the money that Minnesota State no longer receives in this particular case. So their program is at a distinct disadvantage, and accordingly, there's a higher demand for us to lower our operating costs as a city to Minnesota State to make them competitive in terms of financing the lease and overall operations of those games.
Okay. They no longer receive the money that they used to, so it creates an unfair playing field. So now what we're moving forward to, there's a number of issues, gender equity issues, that are confronted in all of the universities. And so in order, and because only the men's hockey team plays in our arena, we're now needing to consider what we might do to upgrade the women's hockey in order for them to meet gender equity issues. So what we're asking for this time around is $1.2 million for design and pre-design of this facility that includes the women's hockey arena, plus some upgrades to the existing facility and an arts center. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to the city manager, Pat Henches, to talk a little more about it and then to answer your questions.
Welcome, Mr. Henches.
Thank you, Chairman Tomasoni. Just to kind of put this in perspective, our facility is very much like a number of facilities. It's a smaller version of the Duluth Entertainment Center that you're looking at. It's very much very similar to a combination of the National Hockey Center and the Duluth Civic Center, Mayo Civic Auditorium, very much similar to what is being planned in Bemidji. But this facility was totally constructed with local dollars under an agreement with the state of Minnesota and specifically Minnesota State University to house Division I hockey, WCHA hockey, along with a regional impact facility. This is a facility that basically serves as a convention arena for southern Minnesota. Our competition are those other arenas. But again, as we've carried this mostly locally, one of the key problems that we're facing now is that our, as men's hockey programs developed around the state, the women's programs developed, we facilitated that in our local facilities, the women's program. We would like to now be able to essentially provide a first-class facility. I think the comparisons of our men's facility and our women's facility are in the handouts. The comparisons of what we like to do for the women's program and the value of that for the community is laid out here in our information. We believe that this is a good model to work with. It's probably one of the big, you know, very similar to the Duluth model, except in this particular case, we've always had pretty much local money, but we'd like to pursue a similar model. Starting with the planning process, we've done a lot of design review. I know maybe it perhaps doesn't meet the state standards, but we're moving along there. We want to actually go to architectural plans and construction documents utilizing this money and be in essentially the queue for the 2010 potential appropriation. This project would have, again, the benefits of a relationship with Minnesota State University in the state of Minnesota. It would have the benefits of providing us parity in terms of our relationships with these other facilities around the state in terms of convention, performing arts, auditorium, and then, of course, the arena will be used for multi-purpose things such as our main arena is today. So we believe it's a good model. It's a very efficient model. It's something that I think we could use in terms of supporting other state local projects around the state. And it's something that is strongly supported both locally and regionally in terms of our facility and, of course, with Minnesota State University are essentially endorsing and supporting this project wholly. I think one of the things that I just wanted to note from an economic development standpoint, certainly that relationship, you've heard Bemidji talk about the possibilities of what Division I hockey and an arena could do for the community. Well, we're an example of what it has done for our community and our area and our region. This is the number one regional draw we have for southern Minnesota. And we expect that this addition alone will generate probably $20 million worth of economic value for both our area and the regions and our adjacent towns with hospitality, other types of things that you know, benefit there, not to mention certainly in the state of hockey, what the WCHA has done for Minnesota and our communities like St. Cloud, Mankato, and hopefully Bemidji in the future.
Yeah, we were just down there. There weren't a lot of you committee members there, but the committee was supposed to be there. And for the tourism conference, and mm-hmm. was in the Altel Center.
That's right.
And it's a very nice place. What's the reason for the women not playing in this rink?
Well, part of the financial model is that there is a big local burden on operations. You know, civic centers do somewhat, to some extent, are loss leaders. But we provide a lot of events in there, and it does not allow us, with the men's schedule and the WCHA restrictions on how you can play these games, 18 essentially games takes up a lot of our winter usage. So the men's and women practice essentially in that local facility up on top of the hill near the campus. We just cannot accommodate the women's program in that facility. And the other part of it, and I'm not necessarily a hockey strategist or anything, but the women generally have played on smaller rinks, like the Ritter Arena is a smaller arena than the larger Olympic size ice that the men more typically play on.
Senator Metzen.
Chairman, yeah, this is I carried the bill for the Ritter Arena, and it's working out pretty well out there. And their own facility, and you're absolutely correct, it's about 15 or 20 feet shorter than the men's arena. And it's working out pretty well for them. And so this is, you're not the first to do this with a separate arena for the women. And like I say, I supported the one at the U, and I think try to help you here.
Oh, I really appreciate that. I know you're when I see the repetition of the requests coming for it, I know it's hard to maybe even remember them or distinguish them. But the central message I'd like to send is to remind everybody that Mankato did this without any bonding money. The first time, the $25 million would be a $40 million request today to develop an arena in Convention Center like we have now. This is the first time we're coming asking for, and we're not even asking for the full. We want a shared relationship, and to remind the senators that it is a shared relationship between a municipal government, a city government, and the state of Minnesota, MNSCU.
Mr. Chair, just to pick up on this, one of the things that was quite interesting as I got into this was we developed this obviously for the men's program. There wasn't women's hockey at the time. Had we had that opportunity, we might have been able to do more flexible things. But it's clear, you know, the women's program, and I have a daughter that went through and played women's hockey, so I'm well aware of this. You know, this is a needed facility. We accommodated women's hockey in our community for the university with our, you know, maybe at the cost of our local program to meet this. But we're at a point where this facility addition, essentially, to our civic center is needed. It's something that will benefit certainly the state of Minnesota and the women's program, but it will also have, in planned outright, have benefit for the region in that this can be used for additional space within our civic center, flat floor space, not necessarily for local hockey use, but for other use in the community. So this has some value. And then, of course, the theater program that we're looking at is in addition to our civic center, but in our convention activities. But that similar model, it will be heavily used by Minnesota State because they cannot accommodate any amount of large crowds on campus. And we're currently doing a lot of their concerts, even at our hockey arena, essentially.
Is that why you can't put women's hockey in there?
To some degree. For example, the region benefits from concerts to Aerosmith to large country concerts, and that is an important economic model that we need to keep our community vital and our community supportive of that facility.
And the income in order to write down the costs of operating come from other things other than the hockey events.
Mr. Chairman, I get back to that. The last 10 years, women's hockey has just flourished in Minnesota. We were fortunate about 8 or 10 years ago, Senator Parasona and some others remember the so-called Mighty Ducks grants. Mm-hmm. And the reason for the Mighty Ducks grants, Senator Tomasoni and others, is because of the women's hockey. And sometimes these kids were skating at 3, 4 in the morning.
That's right.
And
that's
9, 10, 11 at night. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure. I served on the Amateur Sports Commission for a while, too, but Paul Erickson and that bunch have done a great job. And we've probably given grants to 200 or so hockey arenas around the state because of the women's hockey, really. Mm-hmm. And so that's what's going on. Then they're moving up, of course, to your level, and obviously. And so those are really good hockey games, too, if you haven't. Mm-hmm. Any of those women's hockey games, so
we may need to reinstitute Mighty Ducks here. What do you think?
Yeah, we had, Mr. Chairman, we had to. I happened to carry those bills, and it was Mighty Ducks, and then we did the Mighty Kicks too for soccer bills. So anyway, just wonderful to see the women and the girls.
Senator Tomasoni, I have a niece who plays hockey, and I just want you to remember the name Sharon because I'm sure she's going to be playing.
Is she good?
Oh, she's very good.
How old?
She's just a youngster, just in grade school.
Well, yeah, it's really good. Wild.
Sometimes the only thing that prevents women from getting good is they grow up. But
No, honestly, they
start looking at guys, and then next thing you know, they stop playing hockey.
Listen to that, you guys. That's wishful thinking, isn't it? That's wishful thinking that the girls start looking at the guys.
Or the other way around. No, but good luck to her.
Thank you.
In fact, my son is coaching. He's one of the assistant coaches at the University of North Dakota, and it's on the girls' hockey team, and so it's pretty interesting. Senator Metzen's right; it just has exploded, and it's great. It's great to see. So, any other comments?
Olympian, you know that?
Yeah.
Chairman, he gets better.
I just told me, the older we get, the better we were.
Chairman Tomasoni, I still, one of the primary purposes of this certainly is to create that gender equity, but I still will emphasize that the value of this addition, this facility, puts us on par with, you know, parity with the other facilities, some of them are around state, but also from a regional standpoint, this truly is a regional model. This is a mini convention center to the scale of Minneapolis. It's every bit as vital. Our competition are all these, and this help has that added value. Will have an economic impact for the area.
Plus, it's got to be difficult to recruit when you tell the girls that we got this beautiful rink over here, but you can't play in it.
Oh, absolutely, and they're going to. If they haven't already asked, why not?
Yeah, exactly.
Explain that.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Senator Moi.
Mr. Chair,
this is the
and
only
members.
Time. This is the only time ever that when you live the closest, that's a disadvantage. So,
if I knew that a hockey bill was preceding me, I would have stayed a little bit longer in my other committee hearing.
We didn't think it was going to take that long. Sorry.
Well, you know, Mr. Chair, my daughter is only 4 years old.
Yes.
And she asked to play hockey. And Commissioner McDonough has a program in the East Side for little four-year-olds. So I contemplated enrolling her, but four hockey moms came to me and lobbied me not to. Because once you're in the lifestyle, it'll be hard to get out of.
Well, I was just going to tell you to start building up some cash for the future expenditures for your daughter's hockey, because it is an expensive sport, but you'll have lots of fun following her around, that's for sure.
Well, she very much would like it. Well, Mr. Chair, and members, as much as we want to talk about hockey, I'm actually here to talk about a brewery. And it's a brewery that we're in the process of trying to procure some assistance to convert into the Asian Pacific Cultural Center. And so I'm very, very honored that you've given me an opportunity to present to you Senate File 2273. And for those of you who've been around, you know, my first year when I was elected in 2002, I was the chief author of this initiative to ask for some state support to build the Asian Pacific Culture Center. And at that time, we asked for $1 million, and we got it, but it was vetoed. In 2006, we asked for $3 million, and we were given $400,000 in planning dollars, which we're very grateful for. But the price tag, each year we delay doing the project, the price tag has gone up. So last May, I introduced a bill in preparation for this legislative session. And the amount, the initial amount that we had in the bill was 9.75. But since May, we've had an opportunity to do some preliminary work on it. We've had the architects come. And so, Mr. Chair and members, if it is appropriate, I would like to do – I'm sorry I didn't have an opportunity to draw up a written amendment, but I'd like to do a verbal amendment, or ask somebody to help me do a verbal amendment to change the 9.750 to 7.750 on lines 1.6 and 1.13.
Senator Dibble will move the amendment. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. Okay. Continue.
So, Mr. Chair, members, I would before I invite the real experts to share with us the compelling points about this, I'd like to draw your attention to a flyer that we passed out to all the members. I hope you all have it at your desk, at your chairs. And I'd like you to flip it to the back and look at the map of the state of Minnesota. And I'd like to draw your attention to all those red dots that are on this map. And in the core center city areas, each of the red dots represent 10 Asian Americans who live in Minnesota. And in the outer parts, each of those red dots represent 5 Minnesotans who are Asian American who live in Minnesota. And the reason why I wanted to draw your attention to this is that, you know, Minnesota has become a center that draws not only Asian Americans and Asian American immigrants, but it's become home to many, many Asian American children, Asian children who've been adopted by good Minnesota parents. And so we have a large Asian American adoptee community here in Minnesota. And all those individuals, not only the Asian immigrant community, the pan-Asian immigrant community, but a lot of the Asian adoptees who live in Minnesota are the very reason why we feel that the Asian Pacific Culture Center is so critical and so needed for the state of Minnesota.
How many dots are there?
It will take too long to count.
I'll count them up.
The most recent population, Mr. Chair, the most recent population is over 200,000.
Over 200,000. Okay, thanks.
The Asian Pacific Culture Center will be the first pan-Asian center in the United States. The center will be a hands-on educational facility for children, families, and businesses with interest in Asian history, culture, language, and arts. I think that one of the best model for thinking about what the APCC or the Asian Pacific Culture Center represents to Minnesotans is the Science Museum of Minnesota, which has a focus of bringing the entire community together. The Asian Pacific Culture Center, you know, is a meeting space. It is an opportunity to educate about the Asian cultures here in Minnesota, but it also about bringing the communities together to not only learn about it, but experience it. And so today, I'm glad to present this project to you, and I have with me the chair of the Asian Pacific Culture Center, Adil Larry, and its executive director, Naomi Chu, to talk more about the project.
Who would like to go first? Identify yourself for the record. Welcome to the committee.
Good evening. I'm Naomi Chu, Executive Director for the Asian Pacific Cultural Center. And I wanted to say a special hello to my senator, Senator Dibble. I live in Minneapolis. I again wanted to echo Senator Mua's thank you for the $400,000 planning investment in this project. What we are doing is retrofitting and redeveloping a portion.
Can I just stop you for 1 second? Because we had some name discussion earlier now, and you said Mua, and I said Mua. And how is it? What's the correct pronunciation?
Somewhere in the middle.
Because, because Thomasina didn't make it past that one guy that said my name correctly before. So I just wanted to see where Senator Dibble is.
Mr. Chair, I'm pretty sure it's not Mao, though.
Okay. All right.
No, if we have the Asian Pacific Culture Center, I'm sure we all do a much better job of pronouncing these
okay,
different
good.
Names.
All right. I know they never might get my name wrong in Italy either, so okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. So what I was saying is what we are doing is retrofitting and redeveloping a portion of the former Ham Brewery in partnership with St. Paul. Several of you were, able to join us on the tour in December, and I thought it was cold then. It was even colder for our house tour in January. But what we're creating is a library and resource center, exhibit and gallery space, classrooms and lecture space, conference rooms and offices, banquet and community space, as well as a theater. So our pre-design plans are done, submitted, and approved, and this project is ready to go as soon as funding is secured. It's an $18 million project, and, we'd like to start construction. So if this is a jobs bill, we're already doing our part because right now we do have, cleanup and demo already happening on the site. And this is an initiative, just so I can share with the community, that is spearheaded by prominent individuals throughout the state representing many different Asian communities, but also other ethnicities. And these are people who really see what APCC can do for Minnesota. So with that, I will pass it over to our chair, Mr. Adil Lari.
Welcome, Mr. Lari.
Chair, Mr. Chair, senators. So the question get asked why, and the way we see it, that as the Minnesota's economy continues to become more interconnected with the global economy, the need to provide Minnesota businesses with the resources to compete in the global market intensifies. It was recently reported by Minneapolis Regional Chamber of Commerce that over the next 6 years, only 266,800 workers will be added to the Twin Cities to fill more than 655,000 jobs. Consequently, now more than ever, Minnesota needs to continue to be an attractive home for the Asian populace. Over the last 6 years, the Asian population in Minnesota has grown by over 40,000. Percentage-wise, however, Minnesota has drawn less than the country as a whole. Need to accelerate this growth is vital to meeting the future job needs of the Minnesota economy. In addition, while large multinational corporations have access to timely and reliable information from around the world, smaller companies, which are expected to account for the greatest increase in the growth of the trade between Asia and Minnesota, often struggle to get this information. APCC will be a tremendous asset for growth. APCC will be a resource to link Minnesota businesses to the global economy. APCC will help businesses recruit and retain the best and the brightest from around the world. APCC will provide opportunity to use Minnesota's growing diversity for business development. And APCC will provide a competitive advantage to Minnesota businesses seeking to conduct businesses face-to-face with the growing Asian businesses market. And lastly, APCC will send the message to Minnesota's growing Asian population that they are important to the future success of our state, and we expect their contribution to our economy to continue to grow.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We had a couple of museums in here before doing different things, and this is the cultural center, which will be showing us a pretty interesting side of your life. And just this one little line here, over 40 different Asian communities, that's in this handout. Give me an idea of where they're all from. Just Or what does 40 different Asian communities actually mean?
Well, I mean, and those are actually 40 different cultures represented of people who live here in Minnesota. So you can wrap around the map of Asia and go Japan, Korea, China, go to the Pacific Islands, you know, Indonesian, Philippines, Hmong, wrap over to India, South India, Sri Lanka, Pakistan.
So are they actually different countries, or are there different Asian communities within the Hmong community?
The Hmong American community is only one ethnic group of the total of these 40 different communities that represent Asian Americans in Minnesota. Each of these ethnic groups have their own distinct language, their own distinct religious practices, their own distinct cultures, and some of them may come from the same country, like, you know, Laotians and Hmong come from Laos.
Right.
But many other groups come from their own various different countries. So if you were to put the entire Pan-Asian American community together in one room, you'd probably, as Naomi said, have a map of representatives from the map of all of East and Southeast Asia.
Okay. All right. And that's a really good reason to have a cultural center for people to see it. I don't know how many of you made it to the bonding tour to see this, because it's pretty interesting what they want to do and refurbishing the brewery. And I think you should continue to make beer in there, by the way, while you're there. Any questions or comments from the committee? Does anybody else want to make any further wrap-up questions, comments?
Mr. Chair, members, we would greatly appreciate your support and your recommendation of this project to the Capital Investment Committee.
Senator Parasol.
Mr. Chairman, I served on the Asian Pacific Council for a while, and this has been a plan that goes way deeper than the couple times you've heard the presentation here. It's been going on for many years, and many of the cultures are gathering their people and their resources and their willpower. So. Yeah. Well, I think you've seen it culminated
here. It's a pretty neat project, that's for sure. So, okay.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you, sir.
Cap, when's our next meeting? Monday?
The next meeting is Monday the 18th and the 20th. We'll, on both those days, we'll be finishing up our bonding
and
requests.
Hopefully, we're going to get all. If you got any other bonding requests that you need to have heard, we're going to try and have them heard.
Yeah.
By the 20th. I don't think it means we can't hear some later on, but we're going to try and get a recommendation to the bonding chair by the end of that week or early the following week, and see what ends up in the bonding bill, I guess. So with that, meeting adjourned. Good patience.